What an amazing morning we've had so far, and meditation like that is a perfect example of why silence is such an important part of our spirituality and our human development, is because sometimes you need the space to allow those words or those things to sink in. Thanks for sharing that, Abby. And thanks, Jin, for leading us in that that exercise. We weren't the most willing of participants in that. I apologize. I was also trying my hardest, but when you said everybody try to hit that note, I'm like, and then you said hold it. I'm like, I don't know if I can hit it, let alone hold it. Let alone hold it the whole song. I know what was going on there because it did make me think of, speaking of Lord of the Rings, you know, I love in the beginning of The Hobbit where all the dwarves are singing that, and then they're all singing that drone over top there. Like, if we could pull that off, it'd be so freaking cool. It really would. But you know what? It's okay to try tough things and to put ourselves out there. I love it. I love it. We're in this series, Quiet Practices for Loud Times. Week one, we talked about silence, the importance of silence, creating gaps in our world to reduce incoming stimulation. Week two is about simplicity. And the core idea was that quiet gets easier when life becomes less crowded. So it's about noticing the areas where we experience friction in life. And are there steps that we can notice that with curiosity, not with judgment, and just take some intentional steps to reduce friction and whatever that looked like. And so far we talk about making space for quiet, and this week we're talking about building a rhythm in our life that makes quiet sustainable. Because like anything else, if only it were true that to become healthy, all you had to do is walk down the vegetable aisle at your grocery store, grab a head of broccoli, and just chomp at it, and all of a sudden, wow, I feel healthier. This is fantastic. If only it worked that quickly. Like, we assume that if we sit in meditation, and then after doing it for 3 days, we're like bored and our thoughts are racing. We're like, well, this meditation crap is not really worth much. I don't know how those monks do it for those hours and stuff. And then you give up. And I get that. We're busy. But we're talking about building in rhythms. And that's, I think, the key idea of what makes Sabbath, Sabbath. And in a moment, we're going to talk about why I chose that word and my history with that word. We're going to get into a lot of that. But first, the key notion is Sabbath is an intentional rest on a rhythm. It's a rhythm of rest that we observe, not out of legality, not out of legalism and judgment and self-condemnation, not because we think we're trying to measure up or win brownie points with the guy in the sky. That's not what it's about. It's about building a regular rhythm of rest in the same way that we would say, well, maybe I shouldn't just eat broccoli once in the grocery aisle. I probably shouldn't do that at all, actually. You really should pay for it and then take it home. But maybe I shouldn't just eat broccoli once, but maybe I should try to like put it into my diet as a regular part of my lifestyle. Maybe going for a walk one day and then crashing for the next 2 weeks and saying that was stupid isn't really what I need. Maybe what I need to do is just try to build in a healthy rhythm. And that's what the Sabbath notion is building in a rhythm of rest. To illustrate this, I have a question for you. Some of you may be very familiar with this notion because you've lived this out very, very recently. What happens in your body when you get sick? When you get sick. Your body hits pause. Your immune system begins to ramp up, and your energy levels do what? Decrease. You become sleepy. You're irritable, cranky, elbowing that person next to you. You're oddly apathetic. Your appetite decreases. Everything just feels off. And the reason is that inside, underneath our skin, our body is waging this war against these unseen attackers in our body. And that war, just like all war, costs a lot of resources. And your body needs resources to fight the attackers. So what it does is it marshals all of the energy production it can, and it requires more time for you to rest. Your doctor or any medical professional will tell you, when you're sick, the thing to do is not to push through it. It's not to keep going and to try to mask the symptoms by chugging NyQuil or whatever. It's not pushing through it. It's listening to your body and slowing down and giving it what it needs, because your body is quite amazing, actually. It can fight off a huge amount of infections if we give it space and rest and let it build its arsenal. This acute phase response, that's the medical terminology for it, is this strategic shutdown that happens in your body to conserve energy and to marshal resources. Your body needs this huge amount of energy, of amino acids and micronutrients, so rest becomes essential. Wayne Muller, who also wrote about the Sabbath, he said, if we do not allow for a rhythm of rest in our busy lives, then illness becomes our Sabbath. Now, let's not get carried away. He's not saying God will inflict illness on you as a way of teaching you. What he's saying is that if we don't listen to our bodies, our body, like any piece of machinery that is not properly paid attention to, begins to break down and not function. And if we don't give it the rest that's needed, you'll find your immune system begins to drop. You become more susceptible to more illnesses. Your crankiness just starts to become more of a constant low-grade fever of crankiness. Your body, without proper rest, without a rhythm of rest, begins to break down. And what Wayne Muller says is if we don't take the time to build it in intentionally, your body will force you to, one way or another. In other words, Sabbath is what happens when we choose rest on purpose. Okay, I'm not saying like, oh man, I slept in three times this past week. Well, yeah, you were off work for 3 days sick. You know, that's different. You know, are you listening to your body more than just when it's sick? Are you trying to give your body what it needs to choose rest on purpose before your body has to force it? So the first point is this, that Sabbath is not recovery for more productivity. It's not rest so that we can build up our energy resources to go out and charge into doing more, which is the Western way that we tend to think about rest, isn't it? I've got to sleep because I've got a busy week this week. And then when we have more stuff happening, the first thing to get cut is our rest and our sleep. Well, I don't need the extra sleep. And then before long, we're running and burning that candle at both ends. And the fact of the matter is that many of us feel guilty about resting. I don't know why it is that we've kind of like intuited that piece of judgment from our culture. But taking naps and listening to our bodies is not something that we like to admit to. Back before there was texting and cell phones, I remember the only way you could get a hold of somebody was calling them on the phone. And I loved the late night calls because you would call someone and their voice would be all gravelly, hello. And you'd ask, oh, I'm sorry, were you sleeping? And nobody ever answers that question honestly, do they? No, I wasn't sleeping. I'm up. Yeah, I was just reading. My dad, all the way up to the day that he passed, he perpetually always answered this phone in the same way. My brother and I would kind of make fun when we would call each other there because he would always kind of clear his voice before he'd answer the phone. Hello. And that's how he'd always answer the phone. Why is it we don't like admitting that we're resting, that we're listening to our body? Why is it that we have to, if we take a nap, feel like we have to justify that we did that, why we took the time for ourselves? We almost feel guilty that we did that. So I intentionally chose this word Sabbath, and that's a Jewish word. Also in the Jewish, it'd be more referred to as like Shabbat. And the greeting on the Sabbath would be Shabbat Shalom, peace be with you on the Sabbath. And Sabbath is this jewel of a concept that was developed within Judaism. And I believe that all of the great wisdom traditions, all of the great world religions have different gifts that they have given the world. And I happen to personally love and resonate with the notion of Sabbath within the Jewish perspective. And there was a rabbi named Abraham Joshua Heschel who wrote probably the definitive book on the Sabbath. It's simply called The Sabbath. It was written in 1951. He was a 20th century Jewish theologian who wrote with the soul of the poet, but he had the moral backbone of an activist. He famously marched alongside of Dr. King at Selma. And he wrote about Sabbath. And the first time that I remember reading this, and this book has been dog-eared and highlighted for many years, that even after my deconstruction, this is something I've not really been able to let go of, nor do I want to, because these principles that Rabbi Heschel talks about in here are things that can apply to us in life, regardless of whether we're observing it as a law or commandment from the Torah or not. Abraham Heschel says that the Sabbath is not for the sake of the weekdays. The weekdays are for the sake of the Sabbath. It is not an interlude, but he calls it the climax of living. I don't know what your background was like. This morning in pre-talk, we asked about what your history was with Sundays or Sabbaths. And a lot of people mentioned the family dinners. A couple people mentioned the ubiquitous arguments on your way out the door to go to church. Get your shoes on. Are you wearing that? Go back in the house and change. All those things, right? You know, I'm not yelling at you. Get your butt together. Get your Bible. Get in the church right now, you know. It's the, we have these memories that we remember from Sundays, but, you know, as a former pastor, as someone who grew up in the church, like, my experience is probably clouded. It would be like asking more like a concert pianist what they think about playing the piano when they have to do it more in a regular routine than for somebody who just does it for a hobby or enjoyment. So Sundays, as a speaker, is always the biggest day of the week, requires the most preparation. It all boils down to this moment. So it's definitely a work day. Most pastors or speakers will frequently crash afterwards. Somebody mentioned whose dad was a pastor would have a Sunday afternoon nap, and you didn't disturb dad on Sunday afternoons when he was done. But I never thought about Sabbath as the climax of living. That's such a bold term to use to describe a day of the week. But he said, Sabbath is not a pit stop so that you can grind harder tomorrow. It's a weekly reminder that life is more than just outputs. You are a human being. And you need that reminder every so often to get kicked out of the rut of becoming a human doing. Within the Torah, there is this word that is used, kadosh. It means sacred or holy, consecrated or set apart. And within the Torah, within the Judeo-Christian creation myth, the very first word that is used with kadosh to describe something as consecrated, sacred or set apart. It was not an altar. It wasn't a mountain. It wasn't a temple. It was a day of the week. We're told that God created all the other things, but then afterwards he rested, and then he blessed the seventh day, the Sabbath, and he called it Kadosh, holy. The very first thing in the Hebrew scriptures given that category of holiness, of consecrated set-apartness, is a place in time. So if Sabbath is meant to be the climax of living, what does it actually look like for us in modern life? Point number two is that Sabbath rest, it's meant to mend, to restore our soul. Our default rest, and right now I just want to fully embrace the fact that I am in this camp and I'm preaching to myself as much as anyone right now. It's hard for me to slow myself down enough to rest. And our default rest in our culture is often just simply a distraction. We think we're resting when we're scrolling, watching, numbing ourselves, zoning out. Not resting, we're being distracted. And Sabbath is different. Sabbath is not distraction. It's not escape, it's restoration. Heschel says, the Sabbath is not an occasion for diversion or frivolity. It's not a day to shoot fireworks or to turn somersaults, but an opportunity to mend our tattered lives, to collect rather than to dissipate time. I want to think for just a second. What does it look like to collect time? Perhaps it looks like unhurried meals. Maybe it looks for long, tranquil walks. John, one of our members, brings in some of his paintings. This one makes me feel like I can just walk right into it and just step right out into the snow. I think that's the kind of tranquility, that's the kind of rest that Sabbath is calling us to. When he's saying don't jump into the frivolity, he's saying choose a rest that is restorative. I think back on the talk that Beth gave about ways that we can use our creativity, and she introduced the idea of that kind of that doodle style drawing. Does anybody remember that? Does anybody still have their little cards that they did that? Every so often I'll draw something and I'll think to either send it over to Beth, but that is such a lovely way, a puzzle, maybe while you're listening to music, maybe while you're in silence, maybe while you're having a conversation. Those are restorative Sabbath practices that mend the tattered soul and allows it to restore itself. It's the same rest that is talked about within the Psalms in the Psalm 23 about being led beside the still waters that restore your soul. It's that kind of rest that becomes restorative. And Heschel doesn't just describe Sabbath as a boundary, but as something beautiful, like stepping into a different atmosphere. He calls it a palace in time, which is such a lovely idea. He says, the seventh day is a palace in time in which we build, It is made of soul, joy, reticence, in its atmosphere, adjacency to eternity. The seventh day is like a palace in time, he says. It's a kingdom of for all. It's not a date, but it's an atmosphere. He believed that Sabbath was actually like a foretaste for something greater. It was stepping into restoration, not out of obligation, not out of guilt. And for so many of us, we have this twisted notion with a consecrated day of the week, first of all, as a commandment. And most of us don't really do well responding to commandments, right? So if somebody's telling you to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, it's just like, well, hold on, back off. What are you telling me to do that for? Not as something to do because we have to do it, but the notion of Sabbath is something that is meant to be restorative. It's meant to be a delight. And most of us don't have that notion of Sabbath, of Sunday being delight. It's something we do, get dressed and we go to church, listen to somebody preach, bad music, head home. Right? We're not talking about C3 here. We're talking about we know those past church experiences that we think of, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, wake me up. We're not talking about that notion of Sunday being a chance to do something. But Sunday is an invitation into being, what Abraham Heschel calls this palace in time. He spoke of Sabbath as a day on which the hours do not oust each other, a day that can soothe all the sadness away. He even went so far as to write, "It is a sin to be sad on the Sabbath day." Now, he's being a little mischievous and loose with the word sin here, because he's not saying that it's something that you're doing wrong, but he's saying if you're embracing sadness, you're practicing Sabbath in the wrong way. He's not trying to guilt people into a happy mood. He's trying to protect it from becoming another heavy obligation. Essentially saying, if Sabbath is making you feel heavy, making you feel like it's another burden, you're doing it wrong. And that was always something that for me, even before my deconstruction when I was pastoring, I faced, because I had the unique position of being a person who was always there on Sundays. I remembered and kept the Sabbath day holy because I was paid to. That was my biggest work day of the week. But everybody else was not paid to go to church on Sunday, so a lot of people do what you do, and you skip from Sunday to Sunday. And anytime I could run into somebody in the grocery store and you see somebody, inevitably, oh, hi, oh, 2 weeks ago, I was so-and-so, I was golfing and this and that, and I'll be back. And then they're back the next Sunday, just a feeling like there's this, you know, fan the flames of the guilt that they feel over not being somewhere. That's not it at all. It's not this sense of guilt and obligation, duty or responsibility. He's saying if that feels like a sadness, like a weight, then you're missing the point. It's a delight. The Torah uses the Hebrew words oneg shabbat. Oneg shabbat, which describes this sheer joy, this physical enjoyment, this pleasure and delight that we should take in Shabbat. On Sabbath, we don't perform happiness, we practice delight. We don't deny our grief, but we refuse to let the grief be the loudest voice. Now, by way of disclaimer, especially when it comes to this topic, it's important to note that we're not talking about tamping down feelings of grief and sadness. Some people carry clinical depression or grief or trauma or caregiving burdens. And Sabbath isn't a demand on us to feel differently, but it's an invitation to create conditions where the heart can heal. Sabbath is the invitation into making rest a rhythm so that our soul can be nurtured, so that we can experience the Oneg Shabbat, the joy, the pleasure, the sheer delight of this palace in time, a consecrated, set-apart moment in time in your week, in your day, in your month, that you observe. Not for anyone else, but just for you. If the notion of a religious Sabbath or even that word sounds difficult for you, I'd invite you to check out something called the secular Sabbath. And the secular Sabbath is a group that offers resources for creating intentional periods of rest, but in a non-religious setting. This is something that's accessible and available to us regardless of our religious background, because this is not something we observe out of guilt or obligation, but it's an invitation to participate in something that restores our soul. The meaning of the Sabbath is to celebrate time rather than space. He writes that 6 days a week we live under the tyranny of the things of space, and on the Sabbath we try to become attuned to the holiness of time. So here's my closing invitation this week. We're talking about quiet practices for loud times. How do we find ways to turn down the noise on a very turned up world? And embracing Sabbath, if we could do that, could go so far into restoring our souls, especially in difficult times. We've had talks and pre-talk in the last couple weeks about how you reconcile this notion of silence and simplicity, which feels very passive, with the need to engage in a world that is falling apart. And how do you stay engaged? And to that, I would simply say, to someone who could write a book like this while also marching alongside of Dr. King and Selma, perhaps there's a little bit more to this notion of recharging ourselves for the work that we engage in this world. Maybe the best thing we can do is to listen to our bodies, to carve out a place in time, a palace in time, so that our soul can be renewed. So my question is, what would it look like for you for rest to become a rhythm? And I'm not talking, it doesn't have to be Sunday. I think that it's rather humorous that we Christians landed on Sunday and the Sabbath is actually Saturday, and then you have Seventh-day Adventists who observe it on Saturday. Like, it doesn't matter when you do it, but what does that rhythm of rest look like for you? What is the best time and place for you to experience that? And Sabbath practices could be setting intentional boundaries around things that drain you. Could be TV, could be screens, it could be conversations. If you're an extreme introvert, you might need that period of time to walk and be by yourself to recharge and to renew. Some people embrace the idea of a screen-free Sunday or a digital Sabbath. That's a wonderful idea in today's technology world. You know, maybe you're wrestling with how you can engage, as we recently have come off of that empire of screens, and some of you are talking about ways that you can embrace digital minimalism and things like that. Maybe it starts with just saying, I'm going to carve out a day in the week, or from sunup to sundown, this is a period of time I'm going to carve out and try to make this a palace in time and to set aside the sacredness of that space for sheer delight and enjoyments. Brew your tea, sit there with your fuzzy blankets and draw, read a book, do whatever recharges your soul, but do it not out of guilt or obligation and not being defensive, feeling you have to justify why you're sitting in that chair wrapped up in a blanket, but to embrace rest as a restoration for the soul. To not become ensnared in the legalism of the day. Even Jesus, when he was here, found his own people falling into that same trap when they had turned the Sabbath into this series of do's and don'ts. And Jesus is like, you got it all wrong. The Sabbath was made for you, not you for the Sabbath. You're not here to serve the Sabbath, to make God happy by crossing off this list of do's and don'ts. The Sabbath is a gift to you. It's an invitation to make rest a rhythm, and to embrace that rhythm in your life, to make it part of your practice of quiet. quiet practices against a loud and a noisy world. Thank you.